friends, and welcome to the Universal Sisterhood podcast. We're hoping to create a place where women can delve deeper, lift their gaze higher, live freer, laugh louder, smile brighter, and be the authentic woman she was designed to be. Every human heart has been created to be seen, known, and loved. So this is the place where women can share their story. In today's episode, I chat with Annie Lawrence. Annie is a wife, a mother, and a gifted speaker. Annie is passionate about beauty. She sees it everywhere. And she's confident that beauty has the ability to heal, restore, and transform. There are quotes that can be so perfectly simple, yet arrestingly profound, and they stay with you. They're lodged in your memory forever. And one of those quotes for me is Dostoevsky's quote, "Beauty will save the world." I think for me personally today, we have lost the appreciation of what true beauty looks like because we've been on this steady diet of counterfeit beauty. You see it in fashion, in buildings, especially in churches, in music. And I personally think true beauty will save the world. In researching that quote, I wanted to, because I've known it for so long, I thought, who said that? Anyway, I looked into Dostoevsky's quote, and I found this beautiful explanation. It was writings of some guy, I can't quite remember. Anyway, he said that he was attending a reading by a German-Turkish journalist who was imprisoned for years in solitary confinement. His name was Deniz Yücel. And he said he'd been in this prison, largely solitary confinement, and it had been a symphony of metal and stench and steel. And this guy was perplexed as to how he survived solitary confinement. And he asked him, and he said that this guy was about to give him his usual political answer. And he said, "Look, I'm going to tell you something very different." He said, One day I took a yogurt pot and I hid it. I made a substrate out of crushed eggshells and the contents of tea bags over a few weeks. And he said, and sometimes we were given seasoning for our food. So he took a tiny mint plant and he added it to that yogurt pot, to that artificial soil that he'd made. And he had it hidden from the guards. And he said, this mint plant, which drooped so crookedly at first, then started to straighten up. And the beauty of this little plant, he said, had saved him. In the symphony of reinforced concrete and stench, this mint, the beauty of something coming into being, stood by him. More than the mint and its beauty, it was its power. This hymn of beauty saved me. And I just thought, wow, isn't that true of ourselves? When we live into our true beauty, we have the power to not only heal ourselves, but to heal and restore and transform all those that come in contact with us. I think you're going to enjoy my conversation with Annie. She is beautiful and fun and very youthful grandmother. And if you enjoyed the episode, share it with a friend. I'd love to hear your comments, leave a review, share it. That way we get this out there and more people come to understand their true beauty. Okay, welcome to the podcast, Annie. Before I dive into the conversation, I would love to ask you who you are and what your life looks like right now.
Well, Jessica, I wish I had a very simple answer to that. And I used to complain about my husband because he had so many fingers in so many pies. And I wanted him to just be able to say, you know what, I'm a plumber. And it would have been very simple when people asked me what he did. I would have said, my husband's a plumber. Instead, I had to say, well, he's doing his master's in theology. He plays football for AFL. He plays for Hawthorn. He's also doing youth ministry, and it went on and on. And I feel I'm in a bit the same boat at the moment, Jessica, because, look, primarily I'm a wife and mum. You know, we've been married for 32 years now, and we have 6 children. We now have 2 grandchildren, and I feel like grandmotherhood has really come on me in a very quick way, much sooner than I expected, because we still have 1 child at school. So our eldest is 29, our youngest is 17. We still have the one in year 11. And I sort of expected that our children would all be out of school and we'd have a few years to, you know, kick our heels back or do something. I don't know what, rest or something. And then the grandchildren would come when we were old. So I don't feel very old, and nor does my husband. We have the joy of having one of our grandchildren live with us. So she really keeps us on our toes every day, and I feel like I'm right back where I started not that long ago with babies in the house and tiptoeing around sleeps and dirty nappies and things like that. Primarily I am a wife and a mum and now a grandma, and I also belong to the Emmanuel community. So Stephen and I are running the community in Melbourne. We are leaders of the community in Melbourne at the moment. And then also I have a small, I suppose it's called a business. I don't really like that word, but it's called In Search of Beauty, where I am an educator and I help girls in schools discover their own beauty. And also I run retreats for women. And on the side, I also work in the family business, which is school uniforms. So 1 or 2 days a week, I work in this family business, which I really love. It's just part of my history, part of, I think it was my great grandfather who started that business many years ago. And I go down there just to really feel part of this environment. I also love being around the mums and the kids and the dads who are coming in to get school uniforms. I feel like it's a really great way just to connect with people. So I hope that gives you a bit of an idea of my crazy life. Fingers in too many pies, I think.
You take the cake. You have more. You've got more pies than I do.
Oh, it's crazy.
Wow. Okay. So let's go back. I've got lots of questions. My first one is, how old were you when you got married? Because you don't look very old.
I'm not sure if I have the the enhancement version of the Zoom on. I'm not sure. I haven't used Zoom for a long time and I couldn't work it out, but it's probably just a bit hazier than it should be.
maybe the camera's murky, dirty.
I think it is.
My camera's always filthy.
And it helps, or a dim lighting or something. But no, I was married at 23. Mm-hmm. And then I was teaching at the time, so I only had 1 year and 3 quarters teaching. And then our first child came along. We had 4 children pretty quickly, and then we had a few years, and the next one, and a few years, and the next one. I guess I'm 55 now, but thank God I'm in good health and I have a lot of energy to give to the family. And yeah, I feel like I'm a daughter. We've got another daughter getting married in November, and she's currently living in France. And she said to me, "Mum, if I have a baby, you know, will you come and help?" And I said, "Of course I will." So I've got a grandchild here with us. I've got a grandchild in Sydney. I have, possibly a grandchild in Brussels. So,
wow.
I speak a little bit of French, yeah, just a little bit, but it's this whole grandparent thing is really expanding me, and it's beautiful. I find the stage of my life quite beautiful in that I'm not, you know, hugely invested in one work, and I'm not having to work every day of the week, so I'm really available to the family, and I really love that.
There's something to be said about being a young grandmother.
Yes. Yes. As I was sliding down the slide, a couple of weeks ago, and I thought, it's pretty good to be young.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you can look at it in the light of, oh, we didn't get our retirement, you know, you didn't get your break, so to speak. But children make you young. So you have a lot more life. You're living a lot more.
Yes.
Giving you these extra moments to really appreciate life, which is at a crucial point in your life where most people tend to, you know, wind down and think, what can I do for myself now? Whereas you've got this, although it can be exhausting, this kind of resurgence of youth and activity, which is beautiful.
Definitely. And I know last week I had a sore back. I had quite a bad back and I was really debilitated. And it really made me appreciate my health and being able to be there for the kids and being full of energy. And I know that not everyone has that. So what a gift, you know, that I can actually pick up my grandkids and race around after them and be exhausted at the end of the day, but just to generally feel so amazingly strong. I really thank God for the gift of that.
How lovely. It wasn't the slide, was it, that did you back in?
No, it wasn't. I wish I had something dramatic to say, but it was one of those days when you're just pottering around the kitchen, doing nothing much, making a cup of coffee and some sort of twing, you know. So, no, nothing glamorous, I'm afraid.
So you In Search of Beauty is not a business, but it's a passion of yours. It's
Yes, it
a
is.
calling, a
Yes,
ministry, so to speak.
that's correct. Yes.
Did it come out of a blog? Is that right? Or was there a deeper, did it come out of a yearning from you that you wanted to discover your beauty? Or how
Yeah,
did it come about?
I think multi-pronged sort of thing. I've always just had a passion for women and girls, you know. And I think as a young girl, for me, I really struggled, you know, with the idea of my own beauty. And part of that I think came from, you know, way back when I was one of six children, and it was two boys, me, two boys, then it was 10 years, and then my sister came along. So for a long time, you know, it was me and the boys. And for a number of years in the early days, people would meet our family. You know, this is before my sister came along, say. People would meet the family and they'd look at us and they'd say, five boys. This is wonderful. And I'd sort of put my hand up shyly and say, I'm a girl. And I think without really, you know, being conscious of it, you know, I carried that with me for a long time. You know, the fact that I wasn't really recognized as a girl. I wasn't recognized as being, you know, pretty or being girly. And I was a tomboy. I loved kicking the footy and I loved wearing my brother's desert boots and, you know, going fishing and doing all of those sorts of things. But I think I did carry that with me, you know, into probably even today. And I think looking back as well, I went through a period of, you know, being a chubby kid. And I remember one year, my lovely brothers, who, you know, who are great men now, but for Christmas one year I was given a set of scales, a cassette which was called How to Get a Firmer Thighs and Bottom.
Wasn't Jane Fonda, was it?
It was something like Jane Fonda. I don't know if it was her, but it was very close to that. And then a little calorie counter book. And so, you know, I sort of had this message, well, you know, your shape is not quite the right shape. And it is incredible how these things can carry over. Because even now, I can look at myself, a photo of myself, and I'm always surprised. I look at a photo and I think, actually, I'm a slim person. And it's a surprise that I'm a slim person. So I guess there have been things that, you know, carried over. And there was also a point in time where, as I said before, well, my boyfriend, who's now my husband, was an AFL player. And so I was sort of tagging along with all these wags, you know, the wives and girlfriends. And I was, you know, basically associating a lot of models and a lot of really glamorous people. Thank God my husband only ever had eyes for me, which is really beautiful. But it was a challenge to just accept the way I was, you know, when I was always sort of feeling like I was being compared or, you know, tempted to compare myself to others. So that was in my early 20s. And then, of course, having daughters and really wanting my daughters to be affirmed, you know, to be secure in their own self-image, the way they think about themselves and in their own beauty and their individualism, you know, the way they have been created to be just who they are. And to rejoice in that. And I think I didn't rejoice. I didn't rejoice. And I guess just working in youth ministry, and we had a period where we worked in Rome for 3 years at the Emmanuel School of Mission. And we worked very closely with girls from all around the world. It was a wonderful experience where we had 20 students from all around the world. And realizing that, gosh, all of these girls are going through the same sorts of doubts about themselves. And then, of course, seeing my own daughters and their friends. So I think the Lord just really put it on my heart, you know, what can I offer these girls, and how can I really show what true beauty is when they're bombarded with images of beauty, so-called beauty, all the time? But how can we, you know, show them what true beauty is, especially as Catholic women? How can we show them the fullness of beauty? So I think through prayer and just this desire in my heart, the Lord really helped me see how I can do that. And that was part of the reason that I formulated this, especially going to schools. And I have this Annie's True Beauty Salon. So it's a creative way, basically, of taking them through these beauty treatments, and teaching them, you know, really that true beauty comes from God, and that when we
It's a
discover beauty.
universal, don't you think it's a very universal feeling for women to not, we don't perceive our own beauty, I think. We find it, well, I do, and I could resonate with so much with what you just said. I look back at photos of when I was younger and think, oh my gosh, I actually wasn't too bad. But I never could see it. Never could see it. I always thought I was too fat. I always compared myself to my sister. It, like, and I still can't see it. Like, it's still this, I'm always judging myself. So I want to get into your beauty school, how you can rewire the feminine brain to understand her true beauty. And I think it is only when we see ourselves as God sees us. But being able to do that is needs a lot of attention, I think. Before we jumped on, I have you read Letters to Myself by
No.
Emily Stimpson Chapman?
No, I haven't. No.
She wrote it during COVID, and every day she wrote a letter to herself. But I just, this just, when you were speaking then, I thought, oh my goodness, I'm going to read that, because this is what she says about belonging, women feeling that they're not enough. And she says, it goes for a little while, but bear with me, because it's kind of for really helps with what you were saying there. Because she was saying how she didn't feel like she belonged, because she struggled. She married very late in life, and she, anyway, let's go. I'll read it to you. Here, however, is what you won't know. Almost every other woman in the church feels the same, this feeling of not belonging. She says, the other single women feel like they don't belong because they don't have a ring on their finger. The infertile woman feels like they don't belong because they don't have a baby in their arms. The woman whose uterus was ravaged by cancer feels like she doesn't belong because she has only two children in her pew. while the woman with six children and another in her belly feels like she doesn't belong because her family is so much bigger than everyone else's. The working woman feels like she doesn't belong because she spends her days in the office. The black and brown woman feel like they don't belong because they're worshipping in a sea of white faces. The single mum feels like she doesn't belong because she's on her own, in mass, and everywhere else. The mum of the daughter with special needs feels like she doesn't belong because her little girl can't behave in mass like the other little girls do. And she says, I could go on. Every woman at some point kneels in a church or works in an office or walks into a party where she feels like she doesn't belong, where she feels different, where she thinks people see her as other. And some do, there's no denying. Some Irish Catholics do see someone with beautiful dark skin worshipping in their parish and won't want her there. Some homeschooling mums don't look at the working mum and judge her as a failure. Some wealthy suburbanite women do cast withering glances at homeschooling women whose kids are dressed in their thrift store threads. But most women, they're not judging. They're too busy feeling judged. They don't have time to conclude that you don't belong at Mass on a Sunday morning because they too are occupied with their own fear of not belonging. I promise you, nobody thinks about you as much as you do. And I thought,
really beautiful.
Thinking that where we fall short, that we actually don't realize that we're beautiful the way we are.
Yeah, I love that. I remember a really key moment for me in learning to accept myself was it was quite a few years ago. I had six littlies at the time, and it had been a crazy year. I was homeschooling some. My husband was working for World Youth Day in 2008. So we'd had a couple of really crazy years. And he shooed me away onto a retreat. I think it was two nights. It was up with the Seanstan sisters, I think near you.
Sisters. Yeah, they're in Mulgoa.
In Mulgoa, and it was really a big effort. I think I had the youngest was maybe two at the time. It was a huge effort to go, but he was wonderful. He drove me away, and there I was made to go on this retreat. And I'd never been on anything like that before, where it was largely silent, and I had a little room and I had meals on my own, and it was basically long times of sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament in their beautiful chapel. And I remember like the first 5 minutes, it felt so exhilarating just to be alone. You know, I was dancing around the room. It was just to have some space. I had a meal brought in and it was sort of plonked on the table in front of me and I was sitting in silence. You can imagine, you know, being a mum of six, crazy, crazy busy and just sort of getting through this meal. So after about half an hour, it's like, whoa, you know, this is really intense. I had nothing to do. I had no jobs in front of me. So I went and sat in front of the Blessed Sacrament. And over that time, everything was sort of stripped from me. I wasn't a mum, you know, in that moment. I wasn't mothering and I wasn't a wife there and I wasn't, you know, doing anything for anybody else. I had no calls on me except to sit in front of the Lord. And I had this really powerful realization that first and foremost, you know, I'm his daughter. I'm daughter of the King. Before anything else at all. And that was so important for me. I understood that my first identity, my true identity, is as daughter of the King. And if he's the King and I'm his daughter, of course, what does it make me? It makes me a princess.
Mm.
It makes me a princess. He is besotted with me. I'm his girl, and that's having that sense, then I was able to put all the other things in place. I'm a wife, but in relation to, first and foremost, having the relationship with God, you know, who's so besotted with me and cares for me and has a hand on all of those other things that I'm supposed to be. But first of all, you know, it's him. And he's with me all the time in all of those other things. And really that, you know, of course, I have to relearn that all the time. You know?
Yeah.
It's not one of those things that sort of just, I have to go back to that all the time, but it's something I do go back to, you know. I'm first and foremost him. That's where my He's my father. He has me in the palm of his hand. I'm his precious one. And that's how I can say and I can know that I am beautiful, because I'm his.
Yeah, because we are his children. We are his, you are his daughter, I'm his daughter. So we have that inheritance of his kingdom, and he is beauty incarnate. So we reflect his image and likeness. So we must be beautiful somehow in our messiness and our, you know, we must be beautiful. But it's recognizing that not everybody has that, well, not the ability to, a good husband to drive them 9 hours.
Of course.
What a good man. Now that's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? I think it's a cultural thing as well, because I've seen different women interviewed, you know, are you beautiful? And all, you know, all of the Aussies and Americans, oh no, I'm not, you know, I'm passable, I suppose. And I'm, oh yeah, no, I'm, and some of the other nationalities are like, yeah, I'm beautiful. Yeah, I own it. My mum's beautiful. I'm beautiful. Oh, my sisters. Yeah, we're gorgeous.
Yeah.
And we really struggle with that.
I think we have a real identity crisis, Australians in particular. We don't appreciate. We live in one of the most beautiful, naturally beautiful countries in, you know, it's our sky. I remember someone, who was it recently? Somebody came here and they just said, I can't believe your sky is so blue. It is beautiful. But people can't perceive, like, we have a real problem perceiving beauty.
Yeah. I like to call it, you know, our beauty crisis. And I think it is a worldwide beauty crisis that we have at the moment, because we, and especially our youth, are just comparing themselves to these images all the time, where we associate beauty with perfection. We associate really like perfection in body parts, and the young girls, they know exactly what this beauty stereotype is. They can tell you what shape their eyebrows should be, what their legs should be like, what their lips should be like, how their hair should be. And they know painfully know every way that they fall short of perfect. And it pains them. It really is so present in their minds. They are suffering because they're comparing themselves to something that largely doesn't even exist, because most of the images are all, you know, altered anyway. But our girls are in pain because they fall short, because they're not, you know, this perfection that they think they're supposed to be.
So how do we help them heal?
Yeah.
How do we ease their pain? I mean, you have daughters. I have daughters. Yes. Four.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the other things, and I hope my husband doesn't listen to this bit, because, I mean, I do sing his praises all the time, but
told him just a minute ago he was beautiful, so you can.
Well, one thing I'm so grateful for is that my husband actually has always told our daughters that they are beautiful. Always. And I've seen that. I've seen the way it plays out in their lives, because I know our daughters have been very fussy with men. They haven't just thrown themselves at anybody who comes along and tells them they're gorgeous. They sort of have a really deep-seated idea that they're beautiful, and I'm sure partly it's through their dad. So I'm really, really, really grateful for that. And, of course, you say to the kids, you know, oh, don't look at Instagram, or don't, you know, is that going to help? Well, you know, you get the occasional kid who might say, oh, well, I'll limit my screen time. In reality, you know, that's not going to happen. Yeah, so how do we help our girls know their worth? It's really tough. It's really tough. But I think one of the things that I try to do is show them, you know, when I do these presentations, and is show them that this idea of beauty that the world has, you know, doesn't really lead to happiness. Having those perfect body parts and, you know, do these glamorous, perfect people have happiness? No, not necessarily, you know. And I ask them to think about the women in their lives who they love and admire. And I ask them to tell me what they admire about them. And often we get a huge whiteboard full of description of this woman that they admire, that they know in their life, who they love and admire. And they have all these incredible words like, she's hardworking, she's honest, she's really kind, she's self-sacrificing, la-di-da-da-da-da. And most of the time they don't say anything about any body parts. They don't say that, oh, I like her because she's got perfect teeth or anything like that. It's all about the interior character of the woman that they appreciate. And so just to help them sort of see, firstly, the lies that they're being told. You know, if you look a certain way, then you will be successful and happy. You will have great relationships. You will have a perfect life. And, you know, girls are smart. They can see, you know, if you present it in the right way, they can see the truth. So that's the first thing, just to sort of try to deconstruct all that stuff that's thrown at them all the time. And to inspire them with beautiful, truly beautiful women who are great role models, which the media, you know, doesn't do. So one of the things I do is just present some of my women heroes who are truly beautiful. And the beauty is because of the goodness and all the wonderful love and the passion that they have within them, that also shines then out of their faces through their eyes, that they're actually beautiful on the outside because of what's going on the inside.
Who are your heroes? Who are your
The ones that I look,
who,
I've got
who do you
a
bring
lot,
up?
I've got a lot of heroes, but for the girls, I of course Mother Teresa, you know, who wouldn't win any beauty contests, but just has this beauty shining out of her eyes. Another one that I really love is Bethany Hamilton. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she was she's a young, well, she's not so young now, but when she was 12 years old, she had her arm taken off by a shark. She was a champion surfer.
Oh, and did they make a movie about her?
Yes, they did. And she's a really strong Christian girl and talks about, you know, and what makes her beautiful is her determination. I mean, she had her arm, actually her whole arm, bitten off by a shark, and within 12 weeks or something, she wanted to get back on that on the board, and prove that she could still be a top surfer. And, you know, and she made it again, surfing with one arm. So she's another one. I also love Lizzie Velasquez, who's a speaker in the US as well, who was born with, you know, numerous health challenges. And she, as a young girl, she clicked on a box at the side of the screen that said, you know, click on here to see the ugliest girl in the world. And she then saw a video of herself. And ensuing from that were hundreds and hundreds of comments about her that she read. Anyway, she's a speaker now, and she speaks about, you know, basically moving on from that experience, which was, you know, a devastating experience. Yep, soul destroying. And she talks about beauty, and she did a TED talk, and yeah, and I love the way she talks about the power of words, in destroying her, trying to destroy her. And then it was her TED talk and the power of words, you know, things that people said after her TED talk that also, you know, rebuilt her. Yeah, so
what a beautiful full circle moment. Words just, you know, broke her, and words were able to restore her.
Yep.
How lovely.
And that's also the challenge for the girls too, you know, that they're all, you know, it's easy to say things online, isn't it?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I just think what the way we speak is, you know, we can really beauty can shine through us just through our mouths, through our tongue. What are we going to say? How are we going to say it? And that makes us beautiful or not.
Yeah. I think when love is restored, beauty reigns. You know, when there is restoration there, beauty reigns. And I find order. I know creation is, I find such beauty in creation, but not everybody can see that. I can't get my head around the fact that somebody, you know, can look at a sunset that is, you know, incredibly spectacular and not get anything from it. What's going on there?
Unfortunately, I think we have our faces in our phones.
Yeah.
So much. And, you know, you drive past a bus stop, everyone's sitting. There can be a beautiful something in front of them and they're all sitting with their faces in their phones. So we're learning to have our heads down and we're learning to jump to our phone, jump to the messages, jump to all of that sort of stuff. And we don't look up. So one of the things I like to say to the girls is actually look at the sky every day. And you were talking about the beauty of the sky before. Just take a moment to look at it, you know. And I think particularly as Catholic women, you know, we receive that gift of wonder and awe at our confirmation. It is one of the gifts of the Spirit. So it's a challenge for us. We can actually call on that gift again. Lord God, give me this gift of wonder and awe so that we can be attentive to the incredible beauty around us every day, you know, in the small things and in the big things. And I think of, you know, and there's always beauty. There's always some beauty to be found. And I love something Viktor Frankl wrote, Man's Search for Meaning. So, you know, he was a Holocaust survivor. And he speaks about, you know, being ferried at one point from one camp to the other and just spotting through the bars or, you know, through the small crack of light, the mountains in the distance and the snow on the hilltops. And he said that just gave, you know, gave him energy to sort of continue to love. It gave him a will to live. And the other one is these a girl in a concentration camp, and she was describing how every morning thousands of girls would trudge from their accommodation to their workplace, and they would be walking along this concrete path. And at one moment there was a little flower that had come up between the cracks in the concrete, and she watched as all of these women walked straight ahead and diverted around the flower to keep the flower alive, you know. And I think it's particularly a gift of women, you know, to see beauty, to preserve beauty. We have a really beautiful innate thing within us that's drawn to beauty. And you know, we really need to, especially as Catholic women, we really need to continue to call on this gift of wonder and awe and use it every day.
Because beauty leads us beyond ourselves, doesn't it? It gives us an experience of God that, you know, you can't actually tangibly receive. Like it takes us beyond ourselves, you know. There's something, it tells us that there's something more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I get rather caught up in things. You know, I like things to look nice, beautiful things. In fact, recently we have a tarago. You know, we've had this tarago since the 98, I think, and it's pretty beat up. You know,
I don't think they make them anymore. There you go.
No, they don't. They don't. And then we got a new dint in the side, and I thought, well, that's probably going to be the end. But it lived on, and then just more recently I thought, no, this is really the end. So I say it's in palliative care now. And I have this dream of, you know, driving around in a really beautiful little snappy buttercup yellow car with shiny windows and all of that sort of stuff. You know, maybe I'll do that in heaven. But looking at sort of something shiny and new and thinking that's going to bring me happiness and that's, you know, And in fact, it's sort of a dead end beauty, you know, it's not really a fruitful beauty. And even a couple of weeks ago, I, you know, flicking the channels and spied some sort of reality TV show, and everything was beautiful. Oh my goodness, the house was just perfect, and the couches and the carpet and the shiny windows, and everything was just gorgeous. And then the family came in and they were looking just beautiful. They had everything perfect, and these designer clothes and their hair and their teeth and la-di-da. And then they opened their mouths.
Oh.
And it was like, oh, oh my goodness, you know, no beauty there. And it was like the whole thing was this a false beauty, you know, was it leading me to peace? Was it leading me to joy? Was it making me hopeful? Making me look at myself, compare myself, criticize, you know, and complain? Probably. That's probably what it led me to.
Yeah.
It didn't bring fruits with us, as you say, that beauty, true beauty, should make us, you know, dream of something more, should uplift us. You know, there should be peace and joy connected with that. And I often think, wouldn't it be beautiful as women, as Catholic women, if when someone looked at us, you know, it was like they were looking at a sunset.
Mm-hmm.
It should be. It should be, actually. When people look at us, they should be seeing something beautiful that brings them a peace and joy, that uplifts their soul, you know, that makes them sort of search for something more, you know, that brings them a taste of God, you know, seeing our beauty, they should experience God.
Yeah, when you said that we should reflect, our faces reflect what we gaze upon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe we're not gazing upon the true good and beautiful. So that's probably where the problem lies.
Mm-hmm.
When we do, we can't help but reflect what is true, good, and beautiful. So maybe that's why we are kind of living in this, not beautyless, because there is a counterfeit beauty, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
We're living
mm-hmm.
in this counterfeit, how do you say that, counterfeited beauty, beautiful yep. world,
mm-hmm.
Because we're not gazing upon what's true, good, and beautiful. We're looking elsewhere, and we're reflecting that, and that's why there's this kind of distaste with where we are right now in the world.
Yeah, and I love, you know, it's in scripture that we are living tabernacles.
Mm.
You know, so we should, or when we receive the Eucharist, we are like a living tabernacle. We have God inside us, and when we sit in front of the Blessed Sacrament, we're gazing upon God.
Beauty, you know, himself.
Beauty himself. We're gazing upon him. And, you know, when I sit in front of the Blessed Sacrament, and I often come in front of the Blessed Sacrament, and I've got a million things going on in my head, you know. I've got people who I'm praying for. I've got problems that I want to have solved by the Lord, and I've got my own desires and family. And I often just try to sit there and say, okay, I'm in front of you now, beauty, God, I'm in front of you. I just open my heart to you. You know all the stuff that I need. You know it all. So I'm just going to sit with you. And I try to sit in silence, silence of heart and mind as well, and just look at him, just gaze at him.
Mm.
Because, you know, he is the one that's going to ultimately transform me. I mean, we all have these beauty regimes, you know, that we're trying to embrace, you know, do this, do that, the gym, Botox or whatever. But actually going before the Blessed Sacrament and saying to him, you know, transform me, make me more like you, make me beautiful like you, so that I can bring your beauty into the world.
Mm.
And yeah, I know that power in my own life. When I try to sit before the Blessed Sacrament every day. And when I skip out on that, I feel completely different. I feel like I'm unhinged, you know, like
it's your beauty routine for the day.
It's my beauty routine. It absolutely is my beauty routine. And when I sit before him, I know that I am beautiful and that he's making me beautiful. He's rubbing off all the edges. And that's what I say, Lord, just transform me. All these edges and all these things that need healing for your glory, you know, I just sit before you and go to work on me.
So beautiful. And it's so true. That's why you look so young.
Oh, thank you, Jessica.
Yeah, he doesn't just make beautiful things. He is beauty. So the more we sit in front of him, the more beautiful interiorly we become. But it can't help but come outwards. Because
absolutely.
It doesn't just stay there. Beauty needs to be shared.
Yes, yes. It's I remember reading a line that really struck me in Wendy Shallot's book, Return to Modesty. Mm-hmm. And she recounts how she was speaking with her friend about her grandmother. And she says to her friend, you know, my grandmother, she's a really beautiful woman. And the friend said, oh, yeah, but she's old. So you mean, you know, interior beauty and all of that. And Wendy Shallot insists, no, you know, she's beautiful. She's a beautiful woman. She has the eyes of somebody who knows a tremendous secret. And that really struck me because I feel like as Catholic women, we should have the eyes of somebody who knows a tremendous secret. So when people look at us, you know, they should wonder, oh, you know, what is it? What is it that is inside that woman? She's got something that I don't have. There's something exuding. And, of course, what's exuding is the Lord, the love of the Lord. We know the love of the Father. Mm-hmm. And people should see that. You know? And I also remember during World Youth Day there was this beautiful big black American cardinal and, you know, and he said, if your heart is full of the love of the Lord, then please inform your face, you know. Are we showing that, you know, by our face, are we showing love and joy, what comes out of our eyes and what comes out of our mouths?
I know that's probably one of my downfalls. I remember when I was in a season of lots of littles, I used to get into bed at night and think, oh my goodness, did I even smile at my children today? And that used to actually cause me a lot of grief. Like, was I so, you know, task oriented, get the stuff done to get through the day, that I actually didn't even smile at them?
And no, I don't worry, Jessica.
The young grandma is bringing that restoration, because you can do that.
yeah, you're right. You know, but I have to confess, I do remember one day one of my daughters saying, you must really hate being a mother, Mum.
Oh, I had that too, and that broke my heart. Yeah. It's like,
oh, dear.
Do you not like this, Mum? It's like,
you know, but we are so blessed. We're so lucky because we can go to confession. We can say, oh gosh, I'm really struggling with this. And, you know, once again, it's all the sacraments actually that make us beautiful. Of course, sitting in front of the Blessed Sacrament, but receiving the Eucharist, receiving receiving penance, and, you know, that's what the sacraments are for. I mean, we have this incredible beauty program as Catholic women, where we can receive the sacraments. And it's all free. We just have to make the time for the Lord, and He wants to make us beautiful, no doubt about that.
I mean, we make time to get our eyebrows waxed and a facial, and so why not make time for the ultimate beautician?
Absolutely.
Well, it was a joy speaking with you, Annie. I'm going to get the list of your heroes and things and put them in the show notes, and links to your, are we going to call it ministry?
Yes, definitely. Yes,
business.
Yes.
So you go around schools. Can anyone contact you and ask for you to visit their school, or is it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Or parish. I work, you know, with women and girls as well. Yeah.
You might be traveling interstate, Annie.
Well, you know, we've got family in Sydney anyway, so that's I'm up there, but yeah, we get around a bit, yeah.
Awesome. All right, that's wonderful. So I'll put all the links to that in your show note in the show notes. Before we finish off, I always ask my guests something that brought them joy this week. Is there anything that you could tell us that brought you joy?
Look, I can. It's probably a bit silly, but it was just this moment that I had with my 17-year-old son, and we've started watching The Crown together, and this particular episode of The Crown was called Favourites, you know, and like this is my 17-year-old baby son, and we do have this reputation, you know, of being pretty close mother and son, and we secretly, you know, tell each other that he's the favorite. So we just had this gorgeous moment of sitting on the couch, him with his arm around me, and every now and then we just look at each other with a little blink in our eye. You know, and that's really it. It was just very simple, but just a moment together, mother and son, and just really letting him know that he that I like it, that I love him, but I also like him, and we have fun together, just mother and son. Yeah.
That's beautiful. I think you're like your me 10 years down the track. Well, not 10 years. Oh, no, exactly. Probably 7 years down the track because I have a
Okay.
9-year-old
Yes.
who is my son. Like he's the boy, he's at the very end. And I think we'll be doing that.
I hope so. I really do. Oh.
Well, what brought me joy was a podcast listener reached out this week, and I mean, it's not unusual, but this is a man who reached out who said, really opened his heart, and he said some really beautiful things that affirmed what I do, but just to say that the power of women sharing their story, you cannot underestimate the power that faith-filled women speaking truth, how it affects mankind, how it affects the world. And you know, our voices need to be heard. And so I just want to say that to other women out there that your voice matters, the truth of who you are and your dignity and your faith. Share it. Stop, you know, we're afraid of being judged and criticized and oh, I'm not going to say that because I'm just a mom, or I'm just speak the truth of, and speak who God commissioned you to be, intended you to be from the very beginning, because it changes lives and it has the weight of eternity in it. So thank you for speaking, Annie, today as well. But all the other women that have been on the podcast, I'm eternally, God is so happy with you. He loves you so much. Just keep speaking his words and his what he's doing with your life, because it matters to the world. Even a man on the other side of the world, he was listening, and it's really brought him back to the faith, and he now is happy to be on the journey again because he gave it all away. So just keep being you, shine your
Beautiful. Thank
light.
you, Jessica, and thank you for providing this amazing platform. I think particularly for women around Australia, it's a real gift. So, you
Oh,
know, you've
wonderful.
got so many gifts, and you're really
We'll see. Oh.
bringing us all together. Thank you.
I see, there I go again, self-doubting. Yes, I do. Yes, I
Yeah.
do. Thanks, Annie. I'll put all the information in the show notes.
Thanks, Jessica.
Have a lovely rest of your day.
Thank you, you too.
No worries.